Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
This is Tim Staples of Catholic Answers. I'm excited to let you know that I also teach high school apologetics for homeschoolconnections.com, an online Catholic curriculum provider. There are also recorded independent learning courses at homeschoolconnections.com. Whether you take apologetics with me, literature with Joseph Pierce, or philosophy with Bill Donahue, or any of the other 400-plus courses with homeschoolconnections.com, it's a great way to get Catholic learning for your family.
This episode is brought to you by Hallo, the number one Catholic app. Hallo has 1,000 audio-guided prayers and meditations for you to deepen your relationship with God. To listen to all of the Hallo meditations for free for 30 days, head to hallo.com/breadbox.
Warning. The Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. It's simple, really. You either want to grow in virtue and holiness, or you want to be a sissy, whiny baby. If you choose to move forward, grab your whiskey glass, because the Catholic Man Show is starting right now.
Welcome to the Catholic Mad Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. Adam Minahan here sitting with David Niles. We got Juan on the buttons. Jimbo Baggins here this evening with us. We had a gym cam, but he opted out of it, so we're not going to do it.
The thing is that he's so strong. He has this way of, from a distance, forcing the camera
away.
He has a strength,
almost like a force.
It's like a force.
Just
it's like
away.
He's like, I don't know what to call it, but it's like midichlorians or that's I'm just spitballing here. That he has this way of moving things,
yeah,
from a distance.
Okay, we'll start over. Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. This is Adam Minahan with David Niles.
Dave, we had a gym cam.
I am excited about having Pat Flynn on the show again.
Me too, man.
I just really...
He's a good dude. You know,
I really enjoy Pat Flynn.
Great ponytail. I would never say that to his face, but great ponytail.
Why would you not say it to his face?
I don't know. I just feel like it's not something a man should say to another man.
Yeah.
Right.
I love his... I just absolutely love his Philosophy Fridays of his podcast.
Also like great brain.
Yeah, he's very articulate. And the thing about his
gray matter is so efficient. You know what I mean? It's like way more efficient than mine.
Well, the thing about his podcast is that he has such like intellectuals on the show that as the, you know, host of the show, you kind of think you kind of overlook the host insofar as like, oh, I'm just ready to listen to the intellectuals.
People don't say this about us.
I think they do.
Oh, do you? is that a compliment to me or to you? I'm not sure.
But he is incredibly smart. He is just an incredibly smart man. And
that's what it is that people don't say about us.
That's the part.
That's the one. That's what it is.
Yes.
I knew you were going there, so I was a little too soon, but right. Yeah, it's still true.
Yes. But we had him on the show. We talked about fitness and nutrition.
You're having him on the show.
Yes.
Today. He's on our show today.
He's on our show today. And he's doing a course for us, for our patrons.
Very excited about it, because I really want to... I will be a viewer of this show.
Well, good.
I will be.
Yes. We'll start supporting the show. Go to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow.
Are you calling me out for not being a patron?
Of your own
show. Are you a patron?
Yes, I am.
You're a patron of our own show.
I am.
Me too.
I am. So is Juan. Yes.
You guys are dumb. You're on the show. Yes, I do donate to myself.
I don't take the money for myself.
Okay. Yeah, I know. Anyway, so. The bourbon that we're drinking today is is from Cooperstown Distillery. Beanball Bourbon. I really like the name.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good name for a bourbon. Don't know what it means, but like it.
Well, you know it's a baseball term. You know the whiskeys that have the baseball glass. They have the baseball.
Yeah.
I don't know what you call it, but it's not
a case
bottle, or it's like a baseball bottle. It's the shape of a baseball. That's a bottle that's filled up with the whiskey.
Right. Okay. And some of them is like just a case that they.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, they make that whiskey as well.
Oh. Okay. Nice. So, nice.
Anyway.
So yeah. So I mean, you brought this, Adam.
It's a.
What else do you know about
it? It's a $35 bottle of
this
whiskey.
This is $35.
$35. And it's a blend of three different bourbons that they blended together, and they made it a little bit stronger. But what's the ABV on this? Can you remember?
It's 45%.
I think it was at 40, and they upped it up to 45.
90 proof, if you will.
They upped it up to 45 with the three blends because it gave a longer finish, is what the website says.
18 months. That's a good move. I mean, if your age statement is 1.5 years, definitely you're going to quote it in months because like, what is it? It's 18
mm-hmm.
months.
It has a nice color to it.
That to me is very surprising. In a blind taste test, you would have no idea that the age statement on this is 18 months. No, of course, you know, that's the youngest whiskey in the blend. So that 18 month whiskey could be like a tiny, tiny percentage. That could be the part that they're using just to raise the ABV, right, from 40.
Maybe, sure.
You know, and so, like, it's just a young whiskey that's really strong that they're using to increase the ABV, you know, but legally they still have to report the lowest. I saw that.
Crazy.
You just spilled that all over yourself.
Get a little crazy.
You're, like, over-nosing is what you're doing.
I guess so.
But I'm really surprised at both the $35 price tag and the age statement. Once again, I don't really think the age statement means very much.
Yeah. Let's try it. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Cheers.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers, Jim.
So I've actually already tried it. Oh, cheers, Juan.
Cheers, Juan.
Yeah.
We went... So...
On the nose, I mean, a little bit of banana. It's kind of a little bit of a spicy, like, nosing. I'm getting a lot of alcohol on the nose.
Hay and lemon are the two things that pop out to me.
Okay.
Hay and lemon on the nose.
Yeah, I kind of see what you mean. Do you get a... It's a kind of a strong mm-hmm. nose.
Is that strong nose for a soft palate?
The nose is stronger than the palate, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a decent whiskey. Decent bourbon.
No, I would say it's better than decent. I think that it's...
I would say decent.
For $35?
It's good. Yeah. So
Where'd you get it? I have not seen... I don't recall seeing this.
At the 71st and Garnett liquor store.
Okay.
So we went to...
I will be purchasing some of this, yeah.
We went to Juan's birthday party this weekend. Right, we went and danced at a country western bar.
It was a glorious time.
And it was so funny because at one point in time... Me and a deacon that was there that will remain nameless for his...
To protect the innocent.
Yes, to protect the innocent. We're sitting there picking out the theological flaws in each song that came up. So, like, a song would come up and be like, oh, yeah, this is just not theologically accurate. They're trying to make the woman the God. Like, you know, and, like, we were going through this. And we did it for three songs in a row, he and I, and we were just going back and forth. And then I thought, you know what? We're not the life of the party.
No,
this
you're
is,
not.
This is not the life of the party.
Unless you mean theologically speaking. then, of course, you are the only life
of the
party.
If I was in Steubenville, man, that song would bang.
Depends on how you define life, right? Are you talking like from a real reality? Then you are the life of the party. If you're talking about more of an experiential point of view, you guys are... You're the worst. You're the worst, okay? Yeah, thanks for coming, guys. We really appreciate you showing up.
Yeah.
Anytime you want to leave is fine.
Yeah. I did enjoy dancing with my bride, though.
I did, too. I mean, fun. I didn't dance with your bride, but I...
Good.
I did enjoy dancing with my own bride.
Right.
I would have, I'm sure I enjoyed dancing with your bride as well.
She's a very good dancer.
Yeah. So is mine. I mean, we both married good dancers.
Right.
Because I've danced with Haley before. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever danced with
you. Should,
oh, I did at your wedding. You, I danced with
you.
With
next
Pamela.
Time we go dancing, make a point of dance. Asking Lady Pamela to a dance. She is a phenomenal dancer.
Okay. I'll
yeah.
do that. Yeah.
It's
worth, country western dancing is
worth the effort.
I went to Stillwater. Haley and I went to Stillwater at OSU. And like, if you want to do anything in Stillwater, you need to learn how to two-step, right?
If you're going to be anybody.
If you're going to be, you know, if you're going to go to the bars or whatever, right. You know, you got to learn how to two-step. And so, man, it was just like getting out there.
In fact,
again.
There's even the Stillwater two-step, which is like kind of a simplified.
Yes, it's not a quick, slow. It's
right.
a quick, slow. Quick, slow.
And if you suffer from what's commonly referred to, I don't know if it's politically correct to still call it white man's disease.
Or like just two left feet would be a better way to say it.
Sure. I mean, like, if you want to be PC Adam.
Right. Two left feet.
I'm going to just call you PC Adam. Two-stepping is your jam.
Right.
Right? Like, you can learn to two-step. It's a great entry point into the world of dance, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Easy
to transition to the foxtrot, if you will.
If you say so. If you say so. I think it's easier to transition into like the swing steps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, because if you learn basic swing elements, those same swing elements apply to so many different steps, if you will, right? Whether you're... I'm not going to even try to like go there, but those things like the spin and like all
right.
of these, all of
and
these things.
And this is what John Sr. was talking about in his humanities course, right? He would teach actually kids how to dance and
the waltz. I need to learn the waltz because I feel like the waltz is
elegant.
The epitome of
it is,
of leisure, you know, even
right. Like, but that's why he did it. Right. He's saying like, how are you expecting to court somebody? How are you expecting to get a wife if you don't know how to dance?
See, that's not an issue for me. I'm already married.
Right. Well, me too. But it's good to learn how to. Luckily, my parents taught me how.
You know how to waltz?
I did. I probably could. Yes.
Really?
My parents taught me. Like, yeah,
I did not know.
I went to dance
classes. Your parents. My parents also are good dancers. I was like 8 or 9 when they went to like dance classes
in high school.
And learned all these things. Your parents are also.
Really good dancers.
Good dancers, yeah.
Yeah. So when we get back, we're going to have Pat Flynn on the show. We're going to talk about fitness and nutrition, kettlebells, virtue,
who
vices.
Knows? Who knows what else?
So.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan, Juan Posada on the buttons. We got Jim Spencer in the house guarding the door. So don't even think about breaking in.
Mm-mm.
Oh, don't even think about it. This segment of the Catholic Man Show brought to you by The Catholic Woodworker, catholicwoodworker.com. Use promo code TCMS. Tango Charlie.
Mango?
No, what is M?
I don't know.
I don't even know. Salsa. Mango salsa.
Yeah.
Tango Charlie Mango salsa.
For
10% off all of your orders. I will tell you, Adam, the upshot of this episode is that we have a gentleman by the name of Pat Flynn with us today. Pat.
Welcome back.
Good sirs. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to chat with you.
Yes, so we had you on talking about natural, what did we say, natural theology? Is that the last time we had you on?
Natural law.
Natural law.
I couldn't remember.
Now, what's natural theology?
Oh, dude, Adam and Eve? Like, being in all natural?
I guess natural theology would be like arriving at theology
via natural law.
I don't know.
Right, yeah, it's philosophy of God in respect.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. So, but it's great to have you back on. I love being able to partner up with you. I love your podcast, as I mentioned last time, and excited about all the work that you do. And we're going to talk about some of the stuff that we're going to partner up with, but we're also going to be talking about the book you wrote that was like one of the Amazon bestsellers for the fitness area section. Is that right? Is that right?
Yeah. It's kind of a joke. Because you know, I have five or six published books out at this point. I forget which, right. That all took like a ton of time to write and, you know, just grueling projects. And, you know, thanks be to God, they've all done fairly well. But the one that you're talking about is my $1 kettlebell ebook, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that thing is like a pamphlet, right? It's not really fair to call it a book. It's just a very bare bones beginner's guide. And honestly, I put the thing together probably in the course of a single day, and I put it up and my audience is very excited about it, that it hit like number one categories, multiple categories in Amazon, some pretty big ones too. So it just got a whole bunch of momentum. So it's like my most popular thing on Amazon, but it's at the same time, it's like, no, I wanted my other books to be the really book. This is a pamphlet, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't really complain because, you know, it's I'm very happy that people are enjoying it and leaving very nice reviews about it. But yeah, that's the story of it. And it's just a very bare bones, minimalist, as the title says, it's called Introduction to Kettlebells. That's exactly what it is.
This is a kettlebell. The handle is on top. The heavy part is on the bottom.
I mean, that's pretty much it, with a few pictures. So it's not some great literary work of genius by any means.
Uh-huh. Well, so if you guys don't know, go check out Pat Flynn's podcast, the Pat Flynn Show. He just got done. He does a Philosophy Fridays that I love, his Sunday schools on Sunday. And then throughout the week, you have episodes talking about everything from like leadership to working out to business strategies. There's been a couple of business strategies seems like that I've caught.
Yep.
So a little bit of everything with it throughout the week, right?
Yeah, it's a I'm a self-advertised, because nobody else will advertise me, generalist, right? And the idea there, and that was the theme of my most recent published book, the humbly titled How to Be Better at Almost Everything. And the idea there is it was kind of aimed at entrepreneurs and creatives. And what I was arguing was forget about trying to be the best in the world at any one thing. Rather, just focus on getting good to great or at least fairly competent across a broad range of skills. And then you can stack those skills, which is cool because skills in combination are often more powerful than skills in isolation. And it's hard to be the best in the world at any one thing anyways. So you're probably going to have more advantages as a generalist. So my podcast sort of reflects the generalist theme and just talks about any number of things that I'm interested in or engaged in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah.
So today we're going to talk about kind of the virtues and vices of lifting weights, of nutrition, of fitness. Before we do that, we'll talk about kettlebells and kind of like what we're going to be doing together. We're kind of partnering up for our patrons. But so why a kettlebell? We'll start there. Like,
yeah, good question.
Why did you start kettlebells?
Yes, why the kettlebell? Well, I often say it's the minimalist's ultimate secret weapon in the war against bodily weakness, right? The kettlebell, it looks like a cannonball with a handle on it. I often sometimes describe it as a Swiss Army knife of functional fitness. It can do most things that you could want most of the time really well, even if it isn't like the best tool for any one job. So, you know, the kettlebell won't turn you into a professional power lifter or something like that. But most people aren't concerned with that. So the kettlebell, because of its compact nature, it's very versatile. We can use it for strength training, metabolic conditioning, mobility, and we can often train all these things in the same workout because of how the kettlebell lends itself seamlessly to transition between various exercises and muscle groups. So if you're somebody who's just looking to develop a sort of robust general physical preparedness, like you want to be fit in a very general sense, but you're not concerned about being like the fittest or the best in the world, I think in terms of efficiency and bang for your buck, it's going to be very hard to beat the kettlebell. So that would be my opening pitch.
Okay.
In your book, Introduction to Kettlebells, do you cover the, you know, there's a lot of rumors out there about correlations between kettlebells and kettle corn.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you disabuse the audience of this notion in there?
Yeah, we do just page after page of myths. So if anybody is still laboring under that delusion, well, then you'll just have to crack open the book.
Oh man. So Pat, let's.
But I have a question. I do have an actual question about.
Oh, you have a real question.
I do have a real question.
Okay.
I do apologize. I had to get my preferred question in first.
Okay.
But Like, aside from being versatile and like the things that you were saying, like, okay, if you go to the gym where you don't have to worry about owning a versatile or using a versatile thing, because everything, if you go to a gym, they have probably something that's very specific. Yeah.
Right.
But I still see people at the gym using kettlebells. Is there something that the kettlebell is the best?
Yes.
Thing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So sometimes when it comes to exercise equipment, I like to think in terms of killer apps. Like, what is this a killer app for? And the kettlebell is a killer app for a number of things. One, it's great for full body conditioning, especially lower body power. So maybe we'll talk about certain exercises, but you've probably seen people doing kettlebell swings before. It's like this explosive thrusting movement, right? That is something that is quite unique to the kettlebell. Or even if you can do it with other pieces of equipment, it's just very clunky. So the kettlebell is uniquely lended to that exercise. And for that exercise alone, it's probably worth getting a kettlebell, because it's just such a money exercise, right? You're getting cardio, you're getting strength, you're getting power, you're strengthening your back, you're building your glutes, hamstrings, quads. It just checks so many boxes, right? So that would be one thing, right? The kettlebell is also a killer app for metabolic conditioning. And this is where we can start to use the kettlebell for complexes. And complexes are where we just sort of string together various exercises and we perform them back to back with little to no rest in between to tax multiple muscle groups and energy systems simultaneously. So for people who are looking for sort of like the most calorie burn in the least amount of time and to really sort of stoke the metabolism and get their strength training and their endurance and their muscle building all in one, kettlebells, because of how well situated they are for complexes, also a killer app, also just like worth having for that. They're also good for other really specific exercises, overhead pressing, really great. The kettlebell is very well situated for that. So upper body strength, front squats are great for kettlebells, goblet squats. So squatting patterns are really good for kettlebells are awesome for that. There's some weird exotic exercises like Turkish get-ups and stuff, which are cool exercises, which the kettlebell is definitely as good, if not better, than most other pieces of exercise equipment. So there are some places where the kettlebell really shines and I think is the obvious winner. But the cool thing about the kettlebell is it even if it isn't the obvious winner in most other categories, it's still going to cover those bases pretty well, right? Will you probably be able to build a bigger squat with a barbell? Sure. But could most people get as strong of a squat as they want with kettlebells? Yeah, probably, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that would probably eliminate there's a lot of intimidating factors for a guy who walks into a gym. You know, maybe it's his New Year's resolution or whatever. Maybe they have never had the opportunity to be – maybe they didn't play high school sports, so they never had a coach. They never had somebody who walked them through, here's how to do all of these different equipment, all these different exercises. It can be pretty intimidating to walk into a gym if you don't know what all these things do.
Yeah, totally.
And you have all these guys who are super strong and you're over here, I'm just trying to get a good workout in. If you can maybe figure out how kettlebells are used, then you don't have to even actually worry about a lot of these other pieces of equipment. You can use just the kettlebell, and if you use it properly, you're going to get stronger. You're going to get a good workout in.
Yeah, you know, it's the broscape, so it's a real thing, right? Fortunately, I think it's helpful to remind people, well, maybe it's not fortunately, that most people in the gym are so obsessed with themselves, they probably really don't care about how silly you look, right? We can talk about that.
That's a good point, yeah.
But intimidation is a real thing. And you know, sometimes people think this is just a thing for women. It's not. You know, I hear from men all the time that they just don't want to go to the gym because they're afraid that they're going to look foolish not knowing what to do. And there, I think the kettlebell can offer a lower barrier to entry. You're right. Because the kettlebell is also a good tool to learn how to move, right? It's a very intuitive piece of exercise equipment. Like the kettlebell goblet squat, for example. And I have demo videos of all of these on my YouTube channel. If people just aren't familiar with the exercises, you can type it right in. That is a really great exercise to remind your hips how they were meant to work, for example. Like it's very intuitive. It helps you get the squatting pattern down right in a way that will actually translate over to a lot of the barbell exercises. So it's not just a good tool in and of itself. It's a good tool for reminding your body how to move in a really functional way.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
And then when we get back, we're gonna talk about what we're doing together for our patrons. We're teaming up and doing a little course with Pat Flynn, so you'll want to hang around, and we'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Here with Pat Flynn from The Pat Flynn Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Catholic Man Show. Talking with Pat Flynn. Go to chroniclesofstrength.com to check out everything that Pat is doing. Pat's going to be going on the Matt Frad Show March 15th, so check that out. It's the Pines with Aquinas. He's going to be talking about divine simplicity, defending divine simplicity. So you're going to not going to want to miss that. That is, most people who probably listen to this show already listen to Pines with Aquinas, but if you don't, if you
or the Matt Frad Show.
Well, he doesn't do that anymore. It's always it's all just Pines with Aquinas. Yeah,
I've been out of the podcast game for so long.
Yeah, that was a long time ago too. Yeah, so but
was it really?
Yeah, a long time ago. But yeah, so Pat, okay. Pat, you're going to be defending divine simplicity with Matt Frad on Pines with Aquinas, which is super cool.
Have you been working on your Australian accent? He really likes it when people do Australian accents on his show. Just
are
so you
gonna
know,
get me
I'm
kicked,
just.
Are you going to get me kicked off? Trying to set me up for you.
Oh man! Well, before we
No, I'm terrible with accents. I wouldn't even try.
Okay.
If I thought that would actually flatter him, I still wouldn't try.
You should not do it, and then say at the end like that was my best Australian accent. Just so you know.
Before I forget, this segment of the Catholic Man Show is brought to you by Select International Tours. Go check out selectinternationaltours.com. They have a bunch of different pilgrimages that are now opening up. You can, I believe you can still get $500 off a couple if you go there right now and sign up, and you have a full year to complete your, you know, to pick out the pilgrimage that you want. They have a lot of them that are opening up, you know, a lot every single month. You know, there's a lot of them that they're opening that they did not think that they were going to be able to. But I talked to Matt recently, and he said that they're full steam ahead. So go check them out.
Yeah, now is the time really to book a pilgrimage if you're planning on going, because they're still available for this year.
Right.
Like, you can book one and go really soon. Also, I just found out, like, 60% of Israel has been vaccinated. Like, 40% of the people over there have already received a second vaccination. Like,
wow.
They're... like really crushing it on the
vaccinations,
the vaccine numbers. Right. And so, I say that because that means that they're like really opening things back up, because if you're going to book a pilgrimage and get over there, oh, and the Holy Sepulchre
is closed,
isn't open.
Right.
It's like, great. Why did I come here? You know, I spent a bunch of money to just not get to see the tomb, the thing I, you know, right. So that's
a good point.
Like from a tourist perspective, right. They are opening back up.
Yeah. So Pat, we are we're going to be doing a course together. You're going to be doing it, well, not together, you're going to be doing it for our patrons on the virtues and vices of nutrition and fitness, and then like a basic how to. So if you're a guy like we were talking about last segment that isn't really familiar with the gym, is a little bit intimidating for all everything going on, and you just want to like maybe even work out at home, grab a kettlebell, and you're going to walk us through a bunch of stuff that on how to's, correct?
That's absolutely right. I sure am. I want to lay out the philosophy of how I think a Catholic man should approach fitness, right? How we can use it to, you know, acquire virtue, good habits, right? How it can be part of a good, happy life, right? And to avoid some of the common pitfalls and vices. But then I also want to simplify it, right? I want to kind of give the scheme, if you will, of how to really get into good shape. If you're a busy guy, like most of us are, of course, ladies are invited as well. How to make the most of your time, how to develop a robust, what I call general physical preparedness, right? So I take it's very Catholic, right? We take a both and approach to a lot of things. Same thing with fitness, right? Strength and muscle, mobility and endurance, right? These are all different athletic qualities, we want to keep some type of balance, right? In our training, they're all good for us in different ways. And then we'll explore nutrition as well, you know, maybe even get into intermittent fasting a bit, and some just, again, like simple, effective, here's the time-tested, you know, evidence-based nutrition strategies that make a difference. So if you're going to put your effort anywhere, put it here. So simplicity, minimalism, that's the goal, and doing it all through a Catholic and moral lens.
Yeah, so, I mean, we've had Father Gregory Pine on before when we talk about the virtue of studiousness, you know, and the importance of continually as a man to push yourself intellectually. That's why we even did a course with Carla Broussard on the five ways, mm-hmm. was to really kind of push ourselves and kind of get out of our comfort zone and be able to push ourselves intellectually. There's some stewardship that's involved there. Like, you know, God gave us our mind. We should strengthen it and continue to learn more and more to only be able to love him more and more. But there's also where a body soul composite, right, Pat? I mean, we're not just a body, we're not just a mind, but we're a composite, and in doing so, we're a temple, as the Bible says. And so, it's important for us to maintain our fitness, to maintain a physique, to push ourselves physically as well as intellectually. And so, how do you think that looks as a Catholic man? How does stewardship play in that role as a Catholic man? In the physical realm?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that it's so important in our kind of pseudo-Gnostic age to remind ourselves of the deep physicality of our faith, of being Catholics. Like we are embodied. We are, as you say, we are composite creatures of matter and form. So our bodies are important. God gave us bodies. They're good, right? It's not something that we're meant to kind of escape from. You know, the material world isn't the evil place, right? It's good. Anything that God creates is good. You know, it's funny, you brought up the virtue of studiousness. You know, one of the contrasting vices of that is curiosity. And people sometimes kind of wonder, like, well, what's bad about curiosity? But if you think about it a little bit, curiosity kind of detracts from knowledge and studiousness to the extent that you're just kind of seeking out information whether or not it's useful. So a good example of curiosity, I need to refresh my Facebook feed all the time just to see what's going on, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why Aquinas would say that that's a vice. So we want to use prudence, right, to focus on making sure we're getting the information that's actually going to be practically useful and in some sense to further our flourishing and our ends. And this is definitely true in fitness, right? Curiosity often gets the better of people who constantly hop from one program to another or one diet to another just because they're curious, right? Not because they're really trying to develop habits or virtues, proper dispositions, but just because they're soft. That's another vice, right? Softness of giving up too easily. That's a vice. A vice against perseverance. So fitness and nutrition, I mean, there's a ton of room to explore natural law and virtue and vice in this domain. It's actually quite fascinating. So maybe it would just kind of be helpful to trot out the sort of four cardinal virtues, and then we can just play around to see how that they can how they relate to our physicality and fitness and eating. How's that sound?
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, because it does seem like fasting is to the appetites what cardio is to the will. You know,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you finish your thought. I want to hear where you're going with it.
Well, I did finish it. I was.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, dieting is temperance, exercise is fortitude. Done. Right.
Yeah.
A little too simplistic. Right. So four cardinal virtues. Right. We have prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude. Prudence is practical good reasoning. You know, prudence kind of has three faces. We're using one face is looking into the past at our experiences, at the knowledge that we've acquired. One face is kind of in the present here and now, hopefully to make a good decision for a better outcome in the future. That's prudence, right? It's kind of like moral street smarts. That's prudence, right? It's the kind of chariot virtue. It carries all the other virtues around to help you make the right decision in the right way, in the right circumstance, in the right to the right person if you're dealing with other people, right? Which is all kind of sounds very nice, but almost it's like you're saying nothing, right? But it just goes to show context is dependent in a lot of this, and where you are in life matters, right? So that's why natural law is useful, because it's objective, right? There's some objective fact of the matter, but that will often depend on what the context of the situation is, right? Mm-hmm. Which seems appropriate, seems right, because what might be an appropriate challenge for one person in the order of fortitude might be an unreasonable goal and kind of a stubborn headedness for somebody else, if that makes sense. So kind of where you are matters very much to whether you're making a virtuous act or decision or not. So that's prudence. Prudence is going to matter because reason has to sort of guide us, right, to what the good and right action is. Justice is a good one because, you know, you brought up the idea of stewardship, right? And oftentimes people think of in the order of justice, the obligations we owe to other people and the different forms of justice and the Thomistic and Catholic traditions such as commutative and distributive justice. But an interesting question arises of whether or not we have obligations to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And the short answer is, of course we do.
And to our families. Yeah,
exactly.
And to our families, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the cliche of, like, you kind of got to put your oxygen mask on before you assist other people. And there's a lot of truth to that, right? What determines moral action for us is our human nature. Our human nature kind of is what sets our moral bounds, because that's what determines what is really good or bad for us, right? What causes us to flourish as the kinds of things that we are. So that's why, like, a good life or a happy life for a dog might be quite different of a good life or a happy life for a human, because we have a different nature, mm-hmm. right? And our nature is going to demand certain things of us, of how we treat ourselves to have a good life. And one of those things are considerations of our physical health, right? So we have obligations, real moral binding obligations, to make sure that we care for our physical health, right? Because that's part of our flourishing. That's part of our happiness. And this is so obvious, it's hardly even worth mentioning. Like, of course we know that people often suffer unnecessarily because they neglect their health. And unfortunately, they let it go on to a point where they're so ingrained in the bad habits and the vices, it becomes very difficult to reverse, right? And they lament about it. They say, I wish I would have paid more attention to my health when I was younger. I wish I would have started exercising, right? Because this is causing me a lot of suffering and misery at this point. So to the answer of stewardship, yes, in a general sense, we have obligations not just to others, but strong obligations to ourselves. And health is certainly one of those considerations.
Sweet. Okay, well, let's just pick this up on the other side of the break. We'll be right back with Pat Flynn, ChroniclesOfStrength.com. We'll be right back.
Weak mind.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. I'm joined via the internets with Pat Flynn. Pat, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You're just a great guy.
I really enjoy it. This is fun.
This segment brought to you by Juan Posada. JuanPosada.com for all of your Juan Posada needs or desires, if you have Juan Posada desires.
It's interesting.
Disclaimer, don't know if that's a website.
Not promoting.
Maybe don't go there. Yeah. I don't know. But anyway, Juan, thanks for sponsoring this episode. Yeah. Pat, we have a question about, like, I remember, this is my question. I remember
Good.
It.
Good.
Part of our conversation today, I just feel like we're kind of like circling around. I feel like we're John Paul II right now. We're circling around the point, you know, and like we're about to drive it home. You talked earlier about a book you wrote about how to be better at almost everything. Was that the title? About being a generalist. And it strikes me that Catholics are really called to be generalists in like at least a spiritual way, that we're called to excel at the things that we do, right? You know, that we strive for greatness. I mean, that's like virtue is, you know, is doing the things we do well.
Yes.
And so that same principle applies to our person. You know, you might be a computer programmer, but that doesn't mean that you should, you know, like you shouldn't, that's not an excuse to neglect your physical aspect, because you're a man. Part of what it means to be a man is to have strength. That is one of the gifts of masculinity. Just like one of the gifts of femininity is beauty, right? Like I get really fed up when feminists, how they've trained women to like reject their beauty. You know what I mean? Like that's one of the gifts of femininity. Women are just, they're beautiful. In a way that men absolutely are not.
Yeah, right? Look at me.
Right, I know. It's like, dudes are ugly.
Yeah.
But like
Exhibit A, Exhibit B, Exhibit C.
Right, it's not that dudes aren't cool. they're just not beautiful, right? I mean, it's like, they have their own thing. I know, people like... But anyway, so, like, your wife deserves to have, like, a husband who values his strength. And who, like, appreciates the way that he is. God gave you these gifts. Would you just... I that's a lot there for you to comment. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you think about that?
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there. And I agree with all of it, right? Strength is the ability to work against resistance. If you don't have it, you're going to be crushed by life, right? Mm-hmm. That's it. Flat out, right? Now, does that mean you need to be a professional power lifter? No, but you need fortitude, right? That's what we're talking about. Right. You know, and there's kind of, you know, so when we talk about the virtue, it's always the golden mean between two extremes, right? So on one sense, like, we want to have humility. And humility is really just kind of knowing your place, but it's not a pansy self-deprecation. Like, people misunderstand what humility means. Like, I should have the humility to understand that I'm never going to be Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? Because that's just radically unrealistic. And it would be very unwise for me to try and stubbornly pursue that goal when I know, by just all obvious appearances and facts of my biological makeup, that that's just not in the cards for Pat Flynn, right? So it's not a good use of my time to try and be a bodybuilder at that level. But that's no excuse for me to not take my fitness seriously and try to develop as much strength as I reasonably can, right?
Right.
As is appropriate for me. So humility isn't an excuse to be weak, right? Humility is just understanding kind of where you are, right? And what's a realistic goal, what's a good, challenging, realistic goal, and what would be an unrealistic waste of your time, right? Whereas, you know, you have other vices, like we talked about softness before in relation to perseverance, right? So perseverance is kind of that mean between, like, the stubbornness where you have a goal that you actually should give up on because it's so realistic. It's just a waste of time, more or less, and it could actually cause you to lose out in developing virtue in other areas. Where softness is kind of the weakness, right? Where it's, well, you're giving up when you shouldn't be giving up, or you're failing right. to do things that you should be doing. You're failing to take on those challenges. And what's the mean there? The golden mean, that's perseverance, right? And prudence directing you towards the challenges that you should be undertaking as a man, right? And a lot of these are physical. They should be physical, strength-based, developing your strength, and dealing with the external and internal obstacles that come with that, right? So perseverance typically, traditionally, has to deal more with the kind of internal obstacles, whereas something like patience would have to deal with the external obstacles. Don't worry about the fine distinctions. Most people just understand it's good to work through obstacles when it's reasonable to do so. And strength is strength in the broadest sense. It's not just like lifting, you know, triple bodyweight deadlift, right? It's just the ability to work against and preferably overcome resistance. And if you don't have that quality, you're failing in significant respects, right? Yeah. According
life's
to
gonna
what
eat you up.
It's going to eat you up. It's going to spit you out. So you're spot on, man. We live in a very soft, weak culture right now, especially for men. It's not just a war on women. That's true. There's been a huge war on masculinity, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think, like,
I don't know if that answered your question at all.
No, you did. You did.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the things that I can contribute, like playing sports in high school, like one of the main things that I learned in high school, like playing sports, was being able to push myself past the point where I thought that I should give up, and I kept going, and I broke through those barriers, I hit those PRs, I realized that, you know, my body can do way more than my mind is telling me that I can do, and those were moments that I was able to carry on, and they were learning moments that I was able to apply not only in the physical world, but like in the business world, in the spiritual life, in my prayer life. When my knees are super tired and I feel like, oh, well, I can't be praying on my knees anymore. Maybe I should sit down. I realize, well, no, I remember what happened when I thought I couldn't run a 400 meters under 60 seconds.
Right.
And I pushed myself. You know, so those are the things that I really appreciated in high school and my younger life was learning.
Although I will tell you, that is a young man's game. As I will tell you, as I'm getting older,
it's harder and harder to do.
I'm 34. Okay. Mm-hmm. I am getting older.
Yeah, it's like, getting harder and harder.
I am already sensing the whole, like, oh no, push yourself, push it. No, there are consequences now. You know what I mean?
Yourself?
Like, it is not the same game I used to play.
But I mean,
prudence, right?
Prudence, yeah. Yes. Aspect of prudence.
But to your point, it teaches you grit.
Yeah, grit, I know. Yeah, absolutely.
Soul, right, and that is tremendously valuable, and that's what we need. Like grit. And grit isn't a term that like Aquinas uses, but we know what grit is. Yeah. We know it's a good thing when applied in the right way. And if you don't have a grit, well, you need to get it, right? Because life demands it. Mm-hmm. Your happiness, your flourishing demands that you have grit. And what a good place to start beginning to get some, you know, grit through physical exercise, through competitive sports, things like that. And that's the value in it. Because, like, look, I was never cut out to be a tremendous athlete. You know, my primary sport was and still is martial arts, taekwondo. I'm no world champion, but it taught me grit. Right. And mm-hmm. and that, regardless of never winning any, you know, major titles or anything, that is a skill. That's a habit that's carried over into so many different aspects of my life, including the spiritual, but also the business, but also the family life. So, you know, physical activity, the gym, sports, these can be good, like virtue training grounds. But you have to enter in with that mindset. Right. Mm-hmm. I can't just like you want to do it with the mindset and the understanding that this is one of the, if not the primary reasons that you're doing this, right? Yeah.
Fun fact about me, Pat, is that when I was 8 or 9 years old, I actually took first place in a taekwondo tournament. It was the
more than I've ever.
I was the only one in my age group who entered the tournament, and I did not know that at the time. And it wasn't until I was an adult that I realized. That huge trophy. I brought home like a 3 foot tall trophy. I realized I didn't do anything to
get that.
It was like it just handed to me. My whole like childhood, I thought like I have this trophy. I am incredible. You know. Anyway,
didn't they ask you to do some?
I had
punches?
To do my forms. I had to perform for the judges. Yeah. But I do think that there is a contemplative side of lifting weights of you know like just. Physical exercise, whether you're running or, you know, like working out in any way that, if you don't push yourself to this point where you're just weary, where your body is, you experience like a type of death kind of, it is like the sensation that's coming over you as you're just losing the physical ability to do the things that you could do 5 seconds ago. If in that moment, there is some spiritual value as well as you can, if you decide to take that experience and contemplate what Christ must have felt when they put the cross on his shoulder, right? I mean, like the weakness in his physical body, in his passion. I mean, I think that there's a deeper understanding that you gain when you have those experiences. I just think it's something that should be valued. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it can be a very useful form of mortification, right? And this mm-hmm. is, again, a tradition that I hope comes back into popular practice. You know, not to say that everybody needs to take the nightly discipline, they could. But, you know, the idea is that we are disciplining certain desires to make a particular good at first accessible and then effortless. Right. That's what we're trying to do. And, you know, we use reason. Plato has this, you know, sort of illustration of reason as kind of as the charioteer. Right. Who's guiding the horses, and the horses are the passions. Right.
Yeah.
So we have all these different passions, and passions are good, but only when they're top. Right. And right. It can be reasonable to mortify and to discipline certain desires. Right. So that way we can get ordering of our passions. So that way we can be on, and ordering is a very teleological word, right?
Yeah.
Ordered towards what? Toward our ultimate good. So disordered is very appropriate language when it comes to morality, because we can be disordered, ordered away from what is really and truly good for us.
Pat, thank you so much for being here today. We're going to continue this discussion for the podcast audience. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Cheers.
Cheers. Man, I hated to cut you off there. We're sorry, like, because you were... I love where you were going there, but our radio audience...
Actually, the timing was just fine.
Yeah, the radio audience, we had to cut. So, okay, so, Pat, here's two... I have two things that I really wanted...
And I have also saved all my best questions for now. Just
oh, really?
The after yeah. show.
Yeah. The after show. Okay, right. So there's two things
this
that
is
I,
where we can get real.
That you know I mean? That I want to talk to you about, and we'll go with the first, the virtue of decorum. Because here's the problem that I have. We've had this show on for like almost 5 years now, and we've never done a show specifically on weightlifting or we've never had a guy.
It might be our like most requested thing at this point.
Right, and we have.
Oh,
we
really?
Yeah, when we have people who suggest other people to us to talk to them about this topic, and we've never done it before. And I have, because I just have this personal issue, I think, and maybe it's something that I just need to overcome, but of this idea of the virtue, the relationship of the virtue of decorum with working out and developing a social media following, and now look at all these muscles, and now look at all these muscles, and now look at this, and everybody, you know, he's sitting there flexing, and you look at his timeline, and it's like 56 different pictures of him flexing in the mirror and taking pictures of himself. And I just have a
you don't do that?
Well, of course I do, but I just don't post it.
Yeah. Right.
I'm a normal guy, but I just don't post. But like, I have the issue with what is that actually doing? Right, because it could possibly create envy for the person who's consuming that media, because it's like, wow, look at that. That is, like, I wish I had that. And and then it's also
envy is a sin against justice, so that's
right.
Not good.
So that's not good. Then you're also inflating yourself with pride because you're posting it. You're wanting to make everybody have the likes. You're wanting to get all the people saying, like, wow, you look so great. You look so – and then you also just have, like, the sexuality part of, you know, yes. weightlifting and stuff where it's like – I don't even go on weightlifting things or look at anything on weightlifting on social media because all the algorithms will push you towards
all these women who are now
in yoga pants or sports bras or whatever else. It's like, that's right. not healthy for me to look at.
Who are really sex symbols.
Right.
I mean, like, that's...
That's what they're putting them out there for, right?
Yeah.
I know that their intent might not be that, but that's what they end up becoming. Right.
Well, look, man, I mean, you totally nailed it, right? So the fitness industry in general, which I've been a part of for a long time, and it's borderline pornographic, right? In many respects.
Right.
And you've highlighted just some of the very obvious vicious aspects of it, right? Is that a lot of people, and you know, I'm not even going to sit here and condemn other people. I'll use my own example, right? So I grew up very just unhealthy overweight, very unhealthy family, right? So I was a fat kid. I was a chubby kid, right? You actually can't be healthy at any size, as it turns out, right? Contrary to this common slogan that's going around. So I had a doctor who thankfully was before this healthy at any size kind of nonsense took over, who told me, you know, when I was relatively young, so just kind of like going into high school, she said, hey, Pat, like, okay, like, you're okay now, but if you keep, you know, living like this and you don't, you know, consider your weight and you don't, you know, like I was just the kid who just ate whatever he wanted, played endless hours of video games. Right. That sort of thing. Right. Mm-hmm. She said, look, you know, by the time you're 40, 50, you could have some serious health issues, you know, diabetes runs in your family, heart disease, like these are serious considerations. And it actually struck me, like, you know, it struck me. It made me think, okay, maybe I should start trying to do something. And, you know, I stumbled and fumbled about, you know, I didn't have any good mentors at first. Eventually I got into martial arts, which really did give me a good mentor. But then I flipped, right, in from just one extreme to the other extreme, right? So I didn't find the golden mean. So I went from one form of gluttony, which was just excessive indulgences, to another form of gluttony, which was being overly picky about the stuff that I eat, right? So these are some of the vices you have to watch out when you're eating, right? That's a form of gluttony, like, you know, being obsessive compulsive about your food to an extent. So I fell into that, right? Because why? Because I went from hating the way I looked to being obsessed with the way that I looked, right? So, like, you know, I lost the weight. I got in very good shape. And you start to, like, you know, you start to very easily slide into the sin of vanity, as you pointed out, Adam. And this was something that I experienced and struggled with. And then you just kind of get in this cycle of doom, right? Because then you get into this ego comparative mentality. Mm-hmm. You start to set very unrealistic goals. So then you kind of suffered from the vice of just stubborn headedness of thinking that I could really do more than I could naturally or realistically, right? Without taking a little bit of the vitamin S, as they call it, right? So, and then I start neglecting other priorities in my life, other relationships, because I've become so obsessed with this unrealistic thing, increasing in vanity and pride, right? So you can see how I'm doing good things, right? Mm-hmm. Like working out is a good thing, eating healthy is a good thing, but it's actually, in some respects, making me a worse person, right? Because I'm developing so many vicious qualities. Now, this was before I was Catholic, right? But even before I became Catholic, I realized, like, wow, this isn't good. Like, I'm not happy, right? Like,
right.
People
yeah.
find me annoying to go and eat with, right? I'm neglecting relationships. I'm very difficult. You know, how I feel on a particular day kind of depends on how the lighting looks and the camera and how bloated I am, right? Like, these are right. bad things, like really sure. bad things. So, you know, I bring my example out there to say that, you know, you can point to anyone on Instagram, but this is something I struggled with, right? That I dealt with this. And what's the answer? The answer is convert
Jesus.
To the Catholic faith. Jesus is the answer.
Yes.
Sincerity, right?
Eucharistic adoration.
Right. Yeah. No, amen, guys. Yeah, like that is the answer, right? And like I think I can honestly say now that I have, you know, really, you know, it's never perfect, right? You're always trying to sure. find that golden mean, and it's a shifting target. But certainly my passion for fitness has been invigorated in a way that it has never been before. And I'm not a slave to it. Like now it's my servant.
Right.
And still, like, it's a part of my life, but it's not my entire life anymore. And that's a lot of what it is in the fitness industry. Like, fitness isn't there to enhance your life. Fitness consumes people's lives. And so often, and I see this because I, you know, so many people, like, you know, discover my stuff, and I see their stories where they go from just one vicious extreme to the other vicious extreme and just glide right over that golden mean in the middle. So
right.
that's what came to mind when you were talking about Adam, but you're spot on all that stuff.
You know, the extremes are so much easier. You know, I did Exodus 90 last year, and on Sundays, part of the program is you're allowed to relax one discipline, and I would always relax
discipline.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I would always relax sweets, but I found myself gorging. You know, it's like, okay, it's Sunday. You know, like, wait, before I go to bed, I better eat some more candy. You know, because this is my last chance until next week. And about 2/3 of the way through, I said, I'm not relaxing. I'm not doing that anymore because it's not what I'm, you know, that's not what it's supposed to be. I'm not doing it the right way. So even in my own life, I realized the extremes, it's either nothing or I'm going to do nothing because the virtue is so hard, right? You know, it's like to just say, maybe at the end of the day,
I'll have one cookie.
Right. You know? I'll have maybe a bowl of ice cream before I go to bed. You know, I wasn't doing that. I was having, you know, like chocolate chips all day or something. So, I mean, I understand that just from my own. But I also, I loved your testimony. So I wanted to thank you for giving that, because that was a good witness.
Happy to do it. I hope it serves somebody. I hope that somebody can relate to that. I've been there, right? So I get it. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you, though, have you ever thought, like, philosophically how funny working out is? Like, you go into the gym and you like pick things up and you put them down. Like, you just like pick up heavy stuff. One time I got back from the gym and my daughters asked me, what'd you do at the gym? And I found myself saying that I pick up heavy things and then I put them down and then I pick them up again. It was just like a very, when you're trying to tell a 3-year-old what you do at the gym, it becomes kind of hilarious.
It is. It's something of a parody, no doubt. Yeah.
Right. I just didn't know if you had any.
You know, so I do often have my ponderings at the gym, but often they're ponderings over. I have like a little notepad in my phone that I should turn into a series of just like overheard at the gym, right? And it's usually things like some lady talking to their personal trainer, like, "Hey, if I stop taking this supplement, am I going to gain all my weight back?" Stuff like this, just things that are good, I think, topics to cover mostly on the podcast, right? The gym is a great place for reflections. I mean, it's just life, right? So many different forms of life, and just And I go, the gym I'm at, like, you're not going to find a lot of modesty there. And that's an issue. So I've been reflecting on this a lot recently. Like, people are constantly competing for attention at the gym, right? And how they dress and what they do. It's something of a circus, and it's a big issue.
Right.
There was another thing that you guys brought up that I wanted to chat about, but now it's just escaped my mind. So I'm going to have to kick it back over to you.
Well, I think that the importance there, to kind of wrap up the decorum issue, is like it is understanding what the end is. Like, what is the purpose of working out? Are you trying to work out so that way everybody feel like, to get the appreciation, to get the glory, to get the likes on social media, to be able to, you know, stand with your shirt off and feel good, or you know, and like kind of gloat about it?
Right.
Or are you doing it for like, kind of like what you were talking about earlier, Pat, like for the stewardship aspect of God has given me this body in order to till the earth, in order to do the work that the Lord is calling me to do, and for the responsibilities of my vocation, I am called to be strong. I am called, you know, to make sure that I'm in the best shape that I possibly can be. So when that moment comes, I will be ready, right. Whatever that moment is. But like, if you have that end in mind, then the pictures, the, you know, what you wear at the gym, how much weight you have on your bench press, all that stuff doesn't really matter anymore.
Or on your gut.
Yeah, or in your gut, yeah. Or, yeah. You know, whatever that, you know, none of that really matters anymore, because you have the understanding that the end is not for that.
Yes. You know, you pointed out the envy thing is such a good one, right? Because it is a sin against justice, right? So it's a serious sin. It's something that kind of fuels the marketing of so much of the fitness industry. Mm. And the whole point, the way that I see it now, look, there's nothing wrong with like wanting to look good and looking good. There's not, right? So it's the excess we're talking about.
Yeah, sure.
That's the issue, right?
Good clarification.
I mean, Adam and Eve probably looked great. I mean, they probably both had six packs and like were the epitome of man. Right.
Yeah. Not the face. The face, not the face, right? But in general, right? General points, right?
That's why he gave us beards.
So I want to be clear, right? There's nothing wrong with wanting to look good, want to feel good. All those are good things, right? But in their proper order, in their proper relationship. And it's so easy in fitness to get into these sort of ego comparative mentalities where you're not doing it because you want to grow in virtue and help other people achieve their good, right? And to help the world achieve, you know, to help promote the common good, right? No, you want more likes than the other guy, right? You want more shares than the other guy. That is a huge issue, right? And it's a huge issue both for that individual and the greater culture of envy that's being promoted. So the fitness industry is morally sick. It really is on many levels. You pointed out that this, you know, the sexual, just exploitation, of course, is huge, which is very ironic because you guys mind if I rant a little bit?
Yeah, no, please, go for it.
You know, you had this Cosmopolitan magazine, right? They put out this cover that caused a big stir in the fitness industry of some morbidly obese woman with the title that said, "This is healthy." I don't know if you guys saw this, right?
I did.
And like, talk about occupying both ends of the vicious extreme. Because like Cosmopolitan, you are the reason, right? You are one of the reasons why people have bought into this envy, ego, comparative thing. Because of all the models you've starved and put on your covers and photoshopped,
right? That's not even what they look like.
And so you create this sick culture. You know, you're not solely responsible, but you're a big influencer in it, right? That demands mostly women's minds and self-perception, and just creates all these vicious attitudes. And then you're going to act like you're going to go all woke, right? And now you're going to promote this other extreme that you can be healthy at any size, which is just patently ridiculous. Like, okay, yeah, at a snapshot in time, like when I was overweight and young, yeah, my biomarkers would have seemed relatively okay. But any sane person knows, and anybody with a functioning brain who can look at all the empirical research that shows the relationship between obesity, heart disease, kidney disease, cancer, anxiety, depression. I mean, you name it, right? COVID, right? Like, we know that, like, if you're obese, that increases your risk of complications and death from COVID as well.
Sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, this is, I mean, Cosmopolitan is hilarious because they're kind of like that. They're just, they are the fitness industry, right? Just hanging out on the extremes of viciousness, but refusing for whatever reason to try and come to that golden mean and promote what is actually virtuous. So sorry that the whole Cosmo thing was recently on my mind because somebody else brought it up to me. So I just felt like it was relevant to throw out there.
No, I agree. Because like, totally, oh, really? Yeah. Healthy at any size? So you're 500 pounds. You can be healthy at 500 pounds?
Right.
You know, what about 800 pounds? I mean, there are people who weigh 800 pounds. And you
right.
cannot...
Now,
you can't be healthy at 800 pounds.
Like, if you want to say that people's, you know, people have, you know, different body shapes and sizes, and you know, if you're not, you know, 7% body fat, that you can still be healthy. If you want to say that, I'll say, of course.
Sure.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
But you put a morbidly obese person on your cover, and you say this is healthy. You know, a lot of what goes on with these conversations is in the fitness industry, and it's sort of the Mott and Bailey tactic, right? Somebody comes out with something that's just patently ridiculous and false, and you press them on it, and they retreat to what is presumed to be a more reasonable position, pretending like that's what they meant all along, right? It's like, no, you didn't. You guys know what you were doing, and you were challenged on it, and now you're just backpedaling. So sometimes you'll hear that, and it's again, like, but that's what any natural law theorist and virtue ethicist would have told you all along. Like, we didn't need you for that, Cosmo.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for nothing, right? Like these are the things that that you battle against, kind of being in the fitness industry, because it's hard to compete with that, right? It's hard.
Yeah, has to be
to compete with the hypersexualization and the Photoshop and
right.
the steroids and all that. So
yeah. How you mean you can't compete with Photoshop? I mean,
right.
It's just don't even try to do that. So I have one right. question before, and this is my last question before I. Ask it. I want to give a shout out to Adam's dad because he taught me something that I still do to this day about going to the gym. I see Adam's dad at the gym. He and I both, we go to the same gym in the mornings, and he does sets of 33 for every year that Christ walked the earth. And and so, like, I don't do sets of 33 on everything, but there are certain things. Especially like core, like if you're working out your core, you know, higher reps are just better, easier to, you know, like, so when on ab day, mm-hmm. I always do sets of 33, and that's mm-hmm. also a really great thing. I was doing that one time, and a guy was waiting on the, you know, the machine I was using, and afterwards he said, "Man, I'll bet you've got like a fire." And I used that as an opportunity to tell him, "Oh, I always do sets of 33. You know, for every year that Christ walked the earth." You know, it's just like an easy, very seamless transition, you know, to
right.
witness. Just say, and that was it. It wasn't like, you know, "Why don't you come to Mass with me this weekend?" You know, I could have done that, but, you know, yeah. I didn't. It was just, that was what it was. So my question, Pat, was something that came up earlier, and I wanted to make sure I asked it before we were done, about kettlebells. You know, I mean, like, let's say there's somebody who they want to start doing this. Their plan is to, I'm going to try to work out at home or something. You know, before they order an entire set of kettlebells, you know, everything from like 5 pounds to 100 pounds, like, are there three weights, if you say, like, for the, you know, average man, if you get these three weights, this will be enough to cover 90%. What would they be? What would those weights
totally.
Be?
Yeah. I would say for the average man, grab a 16 kilo. I'm going to use kilograms because this is how you know you're in the kettlebell world, because you'll use kilograms, right?
I appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So 16 kilogram, which is about 35 pounds, right?
Okay.
That'll be your lighter one. A 24 kilogram, right, which is around like 52 some pounds. My conversions are somewhat accurate. And then a 32 kilogram. So 16, 24, and 32 kilogram for your average guy. If that seems a bit of a stretch, or maybe you're just kind of a naturally smaller guy, then 12 kilogram, 20 kilogram, and 28 kilogram. Just go for that. So those would be an option for the men. If there's some ladies listening, for most women, again, average women, average size woman, I would say let's go 8 kilogram, 16 kilogram, and 24 kilogram. And the reason you had the spread is you kind of want the heavier weights for the more lower body stuff, right? And some of the lighter weights for some of the more upper body stuff for more technical exercises like snatches and stuff. So if you're willing to buy a couple of kettlebells, I would recommend those range of weights, because that'll cover pretty much all of your bases and give you a good reasonable challenge for the different movement patterns.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. And I said that was my last question, but I do have one more. Does the brand matter? Like if you go on Amazon or something, I mean.
Yeah, I'll throw out a couple brands, and I don't have like any formal association with any of them. Like sure. 10 years ago, it was hard to like find good brands. There was like two or three brands, but now like the like good brands became known, and then all the other brands started copying them. So we're like in a pretty good spot. Like a lot of the brands, like they kind of like figured out, okay, these are the dimensions. This is how we should have the kettlebell. So yeah, there's Rep is pretty decent. Onnit is pretty decent. Kettlebell Kings is pretty decent. Dragondor is pretty decent. And Strong First. So I would say any of those five.
Obviously, Dragondor is the coolest brand name of all those.
Dude, they were the original, right? So Dragondor is like the original Russian.
The coolest one. I don't know anything about them.
Yeah, if you want the OG, you go with the Dragondor kettlebell, right? Yeah, those are the ones that I have, most of them anyways. Mm.
I have a question for Pat.
Okay, Juan Posada has a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Juan.
Yeah.
So, Pat, sometimes when you struggle with a sin before your quote-unquote spiritual conversion, like let's say you're struggling with gluttony or too much, you're buying too much or you're eating too much, when you walk into your journey in your spiritual life, then you find yourself, oh, you know, I'm going to buy all these different statues and all these different devotions, right? So towards like you kind of sanctify your vice into something that you think is, you know, is helping you, but it's a little bit disorder. How do you see this reflected in the workout, you know, pride world? How would somebody that is struggle with that, how can it be translated into this quote-unquote divine struggles?
Yes. You know, first off, you make an excellent point in the spiritual life, right? Is sometimes we can have something that is kind of obviously vicious in one area, but it's a hidden viciousness in another area because it's kind of like wrapped into something that most people kind of think is like, oh, that's a really good thing, right? But we don't. You know, what makes an action bad isn't just what you're doing, but the intentions as well, right? And you guys brought up bodybuilding before. I don't know if you wanted to maybe just mention this, because I think it'll be, and I will get to your question in just a second, because it's a really good one. But, you know, what I say is bodybuilding, you know, inherently vicious? I would say no. A lot of it depends on the intentions, right? If somebody's approaching bodybuilding like as like a really like an art form, they want to be a good artist, in the same sense that a musician wants to make a great piece of art, and they're intentional about not falling into the sin of vanity and stuff like that. You could find virtue in something like that, right? Now, whether
you can glorify God with bodybuilding, I mean, that could be your gift.
Yeah. So I just want to be very clear about that. That can be a thing. Now, whether that's often the case or not, you know, who knows? I'm not peering into their psychology or their souls, but, just want to put that out there. In fitness, to get now to the question, you see this very often with dieting, right? Where somebody will have some type of vicious disposition, typically associated with some type of disordered action in general, around some type of want of control, right? And this will manifest in an eating disorder, but it will be hidden under the guise of I'm eating healthy. You see what I'm saying? Right? And you kind of have this interesting chicken and egg phenomena with eating disorders, right? Because in one sense, eating disorders are kind of linked to deeper disorders. And it might be like, they might not even be sins. They might just be like real disorders from trauma or something like that. So I definitely don't want to say that this is a sin, but I think sometimes it is just vicious behaviors in general, right? So, But somebody might carry a disorder over into eating, right? Like you already have this kind of obsessive control issue in one area of your life and you bring it into eating because it feels like you can get control there where maybe you couldn't have gotten control before, right? You become obsessive with it and you develop further vicious tendencies because of it. You might even become very physically unhealthy because of it, right? But it's under the guise of something good, and that's the danger. There's also the reverse where you can you could diet down so aggressively for so long that you can traumatize yourself, that you can actually develop a disorder, right, from the intensity and the duration of diet. So that's why I say it's like a chicken and egg. Sometimes you can't tell. You know, somebody might have an eating disorder because they brought it into the diet. Other people might have developed an eating disorder because the diet was so radically inappropriate, if that makes sense. So that would be the first thing where you see it very often in fitness, but you see it with obsessive working out as well, where people just have kind of addictive attitudes, unhealthy attachments to certain forms of control, or maybe they're practicing escapism. They're avoiding, here's another common one where they are avoiding certain obligations. You see this all the time in broken relationships of men who are unwilling to be fathers and to be husbands, escaping to the gym, right? Mm-hmm. Really developing a vicious behavior, sometimes engaging in affairs, but you know, I'm just trying to be healthy. I'm just trying to work out, and this is, you know, so much of this is just rationalization, right? We all, sin doesn't just make you weak. It makes you dumb. Right. And, it gives you the opportunity to really fool yourself, and that's a very dangerous thing. So that's a really good question. And those are the two things that just immediately pop out of me that I've seen very commonly in the fitness industry to keep an eye out for. Mm-hmm.
I have a question on what your thoughts are, because you talk to a lot of guys who are in the fitness world, and I'd be interested in what you guys have to say about this. One of the things that – so I box. Like I go to the boxing gym. I hit the bags quite often. And one of the things that I started doing was I started listening to something like – highly intellectual in my headphones while working out.
Really?
To try my best to...
Sounds very cool.
Well, just to try to really push myself...
Hitting the bag, listening to some Aquinas or something.
Yeah, but it's... The reason why is because I want to try... In boxing, it also is an art form, right? It's also playing a chess game. You have to use your mind just as much as you use your physicality. And so I wanted to be able to train my mind to stay focused on something while my body is doing something, exerting energy and pushing itself. Do people talk about that at all? Is that something that people do, or is that something that is beneficial, or can you actually hurt yourself by doing that because you're focusing too much on one? Your body can't. Like you can't do both at the same time.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't know if I have a clear answer to that. I think it would probably depend on the activity, right? So if something is very technically involved, and especially if you're learning something for the first time before you've kind of assumed a sort of, you know, unconscious competence in it. If I'm trying to really pay attention to like the audible of the sumo while I'm also simultaneously trying to like learn the technical steps of a new Taekwondo kick, it might be counterproductive, right?
Yeah.
Right. I'm just being pulled in too many areas at once, but to your point where I think it can definitely work is like, if you already have like the groove down in something, where it's just sort of like a tacit knowledge. And an easy example of this would just be like, kind of like your typical endurance efforts. Walking, jogging, running. I do that all the time, right? So I don't have a commute because I work from home. So when and if I get to listen to podcasts, it's usually when I'm just doing some cardio activity. So easy for me to focus. It's good. Feels good. You know, getting some sunshine because I try to, as much as I can, do that stuff outside. So I would say it probably just depends on the activity, your level of competence, and how technical it is.
I always, like, when I do it, I go into it knowing, like, it's not that I'm sitting down studying. Right, I don't like have that same expectation where it's like I'm sitting down studying, reading the Summa. I'm not expecting to get everything out of it as I maximally could, but it's more of just a training exercise to try to absorb as much as I can while I'm physically exerting myself to work both at the same time. Which I don't know if like you said, I don't know if that's something that's good or not. But it's been very interesting. The last about 2 months, I've been doing it.
It's interesting. So
yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man. Because one thing I think about sometimes when I'm doing mindless tasks, mowing the yard, mm-hmm. for instance, I'm an audiobook person now, you know? Right. And sometimes I think there was a time when people were mowing the yard, they were just mowing the yard.
Right. Yeah. And that was the thought that came to my mind is we sometimes have, who are we kidding? Not sometimes. We live in a world of distraction.
Right.
We've lost the ability to appreciate and take advantage of silence. So that would be the thing I would say to keep on the lookout for with that. And that's something I struggle with, right? It's like, dang. We drive listening to stuff. We mow the yard listening to stuff, watching stuff. Sometimes, you take the take the podcast into the shower, right?
Right, yeah. I've been guilty of that.
So have I, right? It's been some experience. So that's something very much I think is worth keeping on the lookout for. There's a balance to be struck, and not to say that you have to be in complete silence anytime you work out. I don't think that's necessarily right. Yeah.
Well, and the problem is that in the gym, sometimes the music is
sometimes the music is morally even degrading. You know, it's just listen, I'm not interested in listening to this music at all anyway.
There's not going to be silence.
Right, silence isn't an option, right? It's either I'm going to choose what I'm listening to, or I'm going to listen to what's out there.
But Pat, I'm glad you said that, because this is something that it does bother me sometimes. It's not that, you shouldn't ever listen to podcasts or, just always, that's obviously not true. I mean, sometimes podcasts are good, and, if you're listening, especially if you're listening to, a good holy, let's say you're doing the Bible in a Year podcast with Father Mike Schmidt and Jeff Cavins,
I've been really enjoying lately, by the way.
Yeah, I mean,
I dig.
Yeah, I mean, you can sanctify the drive in that way, right? But there is at some point, and sometimes I question, am I crossing? Where's the line? Am I crossing it? Am I devaluing the remedial things that I do? Because there is goodness in just the ordinariness of life, the normal things.
Right.
There's a sanctity in them. And
am
I pushing that away
to try to consume, to be,
because I feel
mentality.
Like to, yeah, to try to be for the sake of productivity.
Right.
I can be more productive.
Or curiosity. Right. That's the other thing we have to.
Yeah. Right.
Just information for the sake of information, but not necessarily forwarding, your real and true good.
I don't have an answer.
That's where it comes in, right? There's no hard and fast answer. That's going to depend on your own practical good reasoning there.
Yeah.
I often find when I'm honest, completely honest with myself, which is less often than I would prefer to admit. I probably could use to listen to less and listen and watch less stuff. Right. And, some of these things are very venial, but venials are to be taken seriously, right? Venials are sort of a spiritual slacking off, right? But those that can compound, right? Just like we know with, the little slacking off in any dispositions, especially with eating and exercise, right? It's the directionality of it. So, it's not mortal sin, but still to be taken seriously.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Okay, so I think that if you are interested in learning about the basics of the kettlebell and learning about the basics of how to work out, some of the tactics or some of the ways of in order to do it without hurting yourself, without hurting your back, what are the ways to do this?
Wielding the kettlebells, if you
wielding
will.
Wielding the
doesn't that sound cool?
That does sound cool.
One does not lift the kettlebell, he wields it.
He wields it, yes. Pat is going to be doing a 5-course for us for our patrons on all this stuff, and we'll probably continue this conversation even more as time goes on. But with you, Pat, man, I'm so grateful for you. I know we've probably bargained.
We got more than we bid on. Pat, you're a man of excellence. Thank you for sharing that excellence with us today.
Well, thank you guys both, and I hope I would invite the gentle listener to join us with this course. I really appreciate the opportunity to work with you guys, and I hope we can deliver some stellar and virtuous exercise and eating plans to the good people. So, yeah, join us, guys. It's going to be fun. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and be sure to keep in your prayers, Pat, as he goes to on Pies with Aquinas on March 15th. And then also, as soon as you guys get done with your book with Gavin Kerr, we call first dibs on interviewing you guys.
Totally.
That would be great. Yeah, I would love it.
All right, man. Well, thanks so much, Pat. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your help. Give our best to your wife and kiddos. Thanks for letting us borrow your time tonight.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Take it easy.
I did the salute thing first.
You did?
Yeah.
I felt like I did.
I totally saluted first.
Are you looking to serve God and society? Consider putting your gifts to work as a lawyer. Ave Maria School of Law has been educating faith-filled lawyers for over 20 years. Ave Maria School of Law is committed to training lawyers to use law appropriately around the moral issues of our time. Visit avemarialaw.edu to learn more about integrating your faith with a law degree.